Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. We're live at the Minnesota State Fair. The aroma of popcorn and pork chops is in the air. The first intrepid fairgoers are out checking out the new rides. We have a great audience here, and we've got Governor Mark Dayton here for the hour. So if you're on your way to the fair, you can find us, as always, at the corner of Judson and Nelson. A big welcome. I always think this is so early. Who's going to come out and be here in the audience? And then you guys show. So thank you. Thanks for being here. We're doing something a little different here. I have, of course, some policy and politics questions for the governor, but we're also really excited about our new national call-in show that starts in September on Sundays. It's called Flyover. It's about who we are in turbulent times. Turbulent. Get it? Flying? Okay. So I've come up with some quintessential flyover trivia questions about Midwestern or American history. I'm going to ask the governor first if he needs to phone a friend in the audience. That would be you. And you can help. You get a shirt. You get a brand new flyover T-shirt. And we just want to give them away. So whatever you can come up with would be great. Governor, welcome. Good
Thank
to
you.
Have you here.
Great to be with you, Carrie.
Could we start with a flyover question? Would that be all right?
Do I have a choice?
No, not really. There are four presidents carved on Mount Rushmore. Two presidents dedicated the monument. Name those presidents. No Googling. No smartphone. I know. I saw that smartphone.
Washington, Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt?
So you named the two presidents.
The two Roosevelts.
What about the two presidents that dedicated Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, so I'm saying. So
you're saying the Roosevelts.
The two Roosevelts.
He's phoning a friend. That is not true. Not right.
All right.
Who knows? Who can guess? It's a little bit of a tricky question because a modern president is one of the presidents who dedicated it. Calvin Coolidge in 1927, and George H.W. Bush. He's Googling. Are you Googling?
You're right.
Governor, I can't believe it. Oh, my gosh.
I want to see when the malt stand opens up.
Way to set an example for the audience. All right, there's more to come. Let's get back to the politics and the policy here. So on the day you filed for governor in 2009, do you remember that day?
I don't remember what happened last week. Back in 2009, the day I filed. Okay, yeah,
all right.
Yeah, I remember.
Here's what you said. If we want our schools to be world class, if we want our highways to be sufficient, if we want health care for our citizens, if we want to get our economy going again, we need new leadership. So that was like your mission statement for your candidacy. I thought we could go through those and be candid about how you've delivered or not on this, all right? Economy going again. How would you grade yourself on that?
Steady economic recovery since I took office. I don't take the credit for that, but it's, we have all-time record high employment right now in Minnesota, the private sector, almost 3 million people. So, the economy steadily improved. It's mixed. There are parts of the state that have not enjoyed that, but overall things have improved.
So why don't you take credit for that?
Well, in politics you get blamed for more than you deserve. You get credit for more than you deserve. In this case, the credit belongs to people in Minnesota, the business owners, the entrepreneurs, who moved forward, expanded their businesses, the like, and the tremendous people. I mean, every time I ask business people, why do you locate or expand Minnesota? Number one reason, good quality people, great productive workforce. So I think it's something where you should all take credit. We got a great state. We have our shortcomings, but overall, and compared with other states, all of you deserve the credit for that.
So one of the reasons that companies relocate to Minnesota is a highly educated workforce, right? You talked about world-class schools. Do you think you've delivered on that?
Well, I think we made some progress again. You know, the funding for public education was cut back, both the K-12 and higher education before I arrived. We've increased money. I put all-day kindergarten, which was long overdue, trying to get universal pre-K as an option for parents and young children.
Which is something the legislature...
That's where I run into a stone wall.
Right. Why haven't you been persuasive, do you think, on that? I think it's
politics. I think some of the legislators think the Holy Grail is tax cuts, and they want to cut taxes. Well, fine, but then you got to cut services and money for things like education, and so where are you going to cut? You know, that's what I keep asking them, you know, where are you going to cut? So we're going to cut, you know, pre-K? We're going to go back and eliminate K-12 funding that we've added, and it's still not enough. You know, we're in the middle of the states on per pupil funding for K-12 education. We're not at the very top where we should be. If we want world class education. We're going to provide world class resources, facilities, and the like. And so I'm very frustrated. Very frustrated the lack of support, enthusiastic support by you know, particularly the Republican leaders.
So, Governor, what I have to also point out on the world-class schools is that may be the case for some Minnesota students, but it certainly isn't the case for students of color who live in Minnesota. You know about the achievement gap, and we just saw math and reading scores barely budging for students of color. So if you look within yourself and say this was a priority— when you announced, what is it that you couldn't do to make a difference?
Well, I'm very, very disappointed in the last testing. You know, I mean, it's frustrating. It's a huge problem for our state because, you know, if we're going to expand our economy, we need more and more well-qualified, well-trained people coming into the workforce. And that's not going to be just, you know, white males like me or white females like you. It's going to be people from diverse backgrounds. It's going to be people coming from other countries and the like. And if we don't have a good education system, a good way to bring those people in, give them a remedial education they need, then, you know, we're not going to be able to grow as a state. So, we're trying with things like pre-K and early childhood, put a greater emphasis on education at very young, so we can try to stop the achievement gap before it begins. But, you know, you look at the housing disparities, you look at the income disparities, I mean, you look at it's a whole combination of factors that all cut against young kids having the equal opportunity.
So when you say you're very disappointed with the scores, that would be a place that you feel like, for as interested and committed as you were to it, you really haven't been able to do much on it.
Well, we tried a lot. We've done a lot. You know, the pre-K and the all-day kindergarten those students haven't you know, moved into those testing years. So, you know, I think that's still up. But, you know, we're doing everything we know and that the experts say is the best way we can approach the early childhood quality educational experiences for the very young, especially for kids in disadvantaged backgrounds. And, you know, we need to do more. That's why, people want to, Cut taxes. You know, that's fine on the surface, but what's underneath that? And we're not going to be a no tax state like Florida or Arizona. We're going to have high quality people, the best workforce, but we got to make our commitment to achieve that.
I'm Carrie Miller. We're at the Minnesota State Fair today. Governor Mark Dayton is with me here. We have a nice audience out here at the fair. If you're coming here, we're at Judson and Nelson. And if you'd like to call in and ask the governor a question as well, audience questions, would love to have them now. We've got people with microphones. Feel free to raise your hand, and we'll come over with a mic for a question for the governor. And on the phone, 651-227-6000. That's to call in for a question for the governor. And questions here, raise your hand and ask, and we'll bring a microphone over to you. We're also doing a little bit of flyover and Midwestern history. Here comes another flyover question, Governor. Lake Superior is huge, but it's pretty young when compared to the age of the Earth. How old is Lake Superior? Give or take a few thousand.
Well, it's older than I am.
Yes.
Who wants the t-shirt?
All right. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Right over there. No, yes. Yes, ma'am.
10,000 years old, last ice age.
You rock it. Way to go. Give that lady a t-shirt, you guys. Come on. Grab one. Nicely done. Did you know that? I didn't know that till I looked that up. How did you, ma'am, by the way, how did you know that?
I had a good education in Minnesota.
Ah,
hey, there all we right.
go. Oh, my gosh. That was such a planted answer. The check from the governor is in the mail. Okay. So, Governor, we were talking about economic development and where Minnesota is positioned in the country and with our neighbors. As you know, Wisconsin is getting a lot of attention for Foxconn deciding to open a plant and create thousands of jobs in Wisconsin. If the Chinese company had come to you and come to Minnesota like they did to Wisconsin and said, give us $3 billion in tax breaks and incentives, we'll give you several thousand high-paying jobs that may be high-paying and may exist for years and years, would you think that was a good deal for Minnesotans?
Well, you have to do an analysis, as we've done when I was Commissioner of Economic Development back in 30 years ago, and as they're doing now, you have to look at what are the financial returns to the state in terms of additional jobs, income tax payments and the like, and for the local government the like, what's the public benefit versus the public cost? And if it's a positive balance, then it's a good deal to go. You know,
But you know the details of this deal. Does that sound like a good deal?
I'd have to look at, you know, Wisconsin, we have more people working now in Minnesota than Wisconsin, first time ever. We have, you know, a booming economy. Our problem is we don't have enough skilled workers to fill those kind of positions for companies. That's the big issue, or biggest issue that we're facing in terms of our further economic growth. So, I mean, I'm glad Wisconsin's catching up. But they are just catching up. They've been behind us in economic recovery. They've been behind us. They got more unemployed people that they can put into a situation like this. But I don't wish, except when the Gophers are playing the Badgers and the Vikings are playing the Packers, I don't wish Wisconsin ill. Their economic success benefits the country.
Okay. Questions out in the audience? Yes, ma'am. Question for the governor.
Yeah, so Carrie, this is Rosie from St. Paul.
Hi, I've got a question about the running government like a business. What area does it have merit in to do that, and where is it folly or just not applicable?
That's a very, very good question. Should you get a t-shirt for that? She should.
She gets a t-shirt for that. Really good question.
All right. You know, running more like a business in terms of making government more efficient. You know, we talk about decision-making at the speed of commerce. You know, businesses, things are moving fast. They have to make decisions. They may not have all the information. They need to have enough to make good decisions. But, you know, and they're, you know, they live or die by those decisions, how they turn out. In government, you've got, you know, it's established. It's not going to go away. And so there's not the same incentive to take risks and move forward and make decisions and act. Conversely, you know, people say run it more like a business. Businesses invest in their future. The successful businesses are making capital investments to build new retail outlets, new factories, whatever. And, you know, they make those investments. They incur debt in order to make those investments. That's why it's just so idiotic not to have a healthy bonding bills and have them every year. You know, we could put $1 billion plus into the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State campuses just to catch up, just to create world-class facilities. Now, 3M's not going to be world-class if they don't have world-class facilities. They know that. Why doesn't the Minnesota legislature figure that out?
Question right there in the front row. Yes, sir.
Thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to meet you and to see you. Given that the Minnesota Supreme Court has decided to allow cameras in the courtroom, what is your opinion of that procedure, especially considering that the first item on the docket is the Minnesota legislator suing you?
Well, they're going to live stream it, so I mean, maybe they should sell tickets soon. You know, I'm for openness in government, and I think that it's, other than it needs some parameters, they're not distracting from the presentations, the debate, and the like, but to allow a lot of the public to see and allow people to see more, whether it's live streaming or through still cameras or radio, you know, I'm all for that.
So, Governor, since we're on that topic, looking back in the way you made the decision on those vetoes, would you do it all over again?
Absolutely.
As you did?
Absolutely.
Really,
you know,
with no calmer thought and hindsight?
You know, regardless of the outcome by the Supreme Court, I'm at peace with that decision because, you know, again, I want to focus on the reasons I did it. The three tax bills that would cost... That tax bill that they passed in the dead of night, the last minute, over 500 pages. We hadn't seen it. No one, I think, has seen it. And it cost the state over $10 billion over the next 10 years. So, you know, if you take $1 billion for each year or the next 2 years out of the state revenues, we'd go from budget surpluses to budget deficits. And they're putting Minnesota right on the precipice once again. And if I win or lose the Supreme Court decision, I'm going to bring that issue back to the legislature next session.
But isn't that where it belongs, Governor, in the legislature, in an open debate,
to get there,
and not managed in a veto the way you did it?
Well, the Constitution gives me clear authority to do line item vetoes. It doesn't put any limits on who. It doesn't say any limits on why. I exercise my best judgment, what I think is best for the state of Minnesota, and I'll stand on that.
Okay, call here from Bill in Brooklyn Park. Hi, Bill. Your question for the governor.
Give them all T-shirts, please.
Hold on now. We might run out. Hi, Bill. You're on with the governor.
Hi, thank you. Governor, I'd like to know if you support our Rolnick's plan for early childhood. It goes beyond classroom education, goes beyond preschool. It also deals with working with parents and helping in parenting skills. But it is more limited to need-based, but it seems to show great results and reflects Jeffrey Canada's work in Brooklyn.
I have great respect for Art Rolnick. You know, he and Don Frazier, I can remember 45 years ago, were out front on the need for moving our education system younger and younger, and they were absolutely right, and they were ahead of their time. You know, I think that quality child care, starting, you know, at birth and going forward, as parents decide they want to use that availability, is fantastic. And the better quality we can make child care, better learning opportunities that we can provide infants to young children through quality child care is tremendous. And, you know, we put a lot more money into the need-based child care in terms of our state support. But I don't think it's either or. I think it's both. I think it's pre-K. You know, there are places that don't have quality child care options. The schools should be available for that. The parents should decide what's best for their kids. Do they want their kids to stay at home? Do they want their kids to be in quality child care? Do they want their kids to go to a quality pre-K program? We should give up those choices to every Minnesota parent and those opportunities to every Minnesota four-year-old.
Governor, one of the things that you've talked about from the beginning, when I looked at some of the things you were saying during that first campaign, way back, you were talking about health care for everyone. More Minnesotans have health care under the ACA. But in 2016, you said this: I'm not trying to pass the buck here, but the reality is the Affordable Care Act is no longer affordable. Do you think you were too enthusiastic, too early, given a lot of the problems that have come up for the ACA?
Well, I've been for single payer for 20 years. I wasn't advocating for the Affordable Care Act. I think it's a hybrid. It's a compromise. It's, you know, keeps the private insurance companies in the driver's seat, and that's a big part of what's escalating the cost, as well as the cost of health care. So, you know, the fact that they've broadened access, we have, you know, the lowest percent of uninsured now ever in Minnesota, is a tremendous accomplishment. There are other things like, you know, not being able to be excluded for pre-existing conditions, no having a lifetime limit, having your kids covered till you're 26. Those are tremendous safeguards for people that should be part of whatever our system is going forward. But, you know, yeah, healthcare costs have increased. and the insurance aspect of that has increased them further. Prescription drugs, back when I was in the U.S. Senate, you know, they took the Senate and House bills back when they had Republican majorities, the House Senate went behind closed doors and came back out with something that was in neither bill, which was that the CMS, the federal government, could not negotiate lower prescription drug prices. They had to take whatever the drug companies set as their cost and had to pay it. So you tell the Department of Defense, well, you know, let's have them charge whatever they want for a B-2 bomber, and you got to pay it. I mean, it's just lunacy. And so, you know, there are all sorts of factors that have driven these costs up. And, you know, Affordable Care Act, of course, being the status quo, gets blamed for all of it. And some of that's fair, some of it's not.
So where do you think the accountability lies with the fact that the ACA, in your own words, is no longer affordable and has some pretty significant problems?
Well, if we want to use that model, and no one's come up with anything better, and the Congress obviously can't even figure out where to go from here, then we need to provide, and this has been on the table for the last 6 years, things that the federal government can do along the lines of what our state government has done, which is reinsurance and covering some of the most expensive costs so they don't, insurers don't have to put that on every rate payer. You know, there are things that could have been done 6 years ago, but Congress just gridlocked it and wouldn't, you know, it was a great whipping post for everything that was happening with health care. And they didn't want to make it better. They just wanted to take the political advantage of the situation. So you know, if we want to keep the system we have now, and no one's going to say, no one's ready to move on to something else, then we need to have the federal government step in and do what they need to do to make it better, make it more affordable,
okay,
as we've done in Minnesota, and we got lower rate increases than almost anywhere else this next year.
So I just want to be clear here. I mean, at the moment, we're living with the ACA, and your message to Minnesotans who feel like they're paying too much for health care and see some of the other problems is, well, this is how it is for a while.
Well, if I had the power to change it, we'd have single payer, and we'd have operate like a Medicare for everybody, or the way Social Security does, with a minimal. Social Security operates at 3%, administrative costs at 3%. And Medicare is not about the same. Now they have passed a law saying that the private insurers can't have administrative costs more than 20%. So, you know, right away you've got this profit-making system, and you got companies that are selling insurance who are deciding whether somebody's going to use it or not because they don't want people to use their insurance, and they want to make it as difficult as possible.
Okay, so I just want to...
You know, it's, the system's flawed. But you're going to have to change the whole system in order to get the results that we're all looking for.
So I just want to be clear about what you just said. There are big insurers who don't want the people that they insure to use that insurance. That's your belief about how the health insurance industry works.
Well, I mean, there are legal protections for people. And, you know, I'm not saying they're you know, responsible companies and they pay up. But yeah, I mean, they make their profit by charging their customers more than their customers take in terms of insurance claims. And, you know, people aren't buying their insurance to give money to the insurance company. They're buying insurance so they have the protection that they need if and when a catastrophe strikes them or their families.
And it's your opinion that insurers fail them
some,
in that?
Some.
Okay.
In some cases, not in all. But, you know.
Okay. Question right out there.
Hi, Governor. Thank you for coming out and being willing to actually discuss the issues. It's very refreshing.
Thank you.
I'm a big Tim Walz fan. I'm wondering how you handicap his odds in the coming election.
Oh, I am staying out of it, you know. I've got all the Republicans trashing me. All the DFLers are trying to tiptoe around me. This year is my last year at the fair. Next year I'll be just a footnote somewhere. You know, he's one of I'm not going to get it. He's one of many good candidates. I have great respect for him. He's done a superb job as a congressman. We have other outstanding candidates with great records. And Minnesotans are going to have good choices next year.
I just saw Mayor Coleman on my way into the fair. He'd like to be governor, too. Why do you think so many people want the job?
It's a great job. You know, if you believe in public service as a chance to make a difference, you know, having been in the U.S. Senate, where I was felt I couldn't make a difference with all the seniority and all the look at what's going on now. As governor, you can lead, you can put your agenda forward. You're not going to get everything, but that's the way our system's set up. No one's supposed to get all their way, but you can lead and you can make a difference. And when I see the difference in people's lives from something that we've done, and people tell me that, you know, that makes it all worthwhile. So it's the best job in government.
What do you now know about being governor that you wish you'd known at the beginning?
Just how intransigent the legislature, particularly the Republican side, has become. You know, we in the U.S. Senate, 99% of it proceeds by what's called unanimous consent. Everybody agrees to let something go forward. And the other 1%, you know, is what gets public attention. And, you know, Mitch McConnell has his faults, but he understands at the end you got to make a compromise. You got to if you're going to get anything accomplished. Well, it's so polarized now, and there are so many people who think that intransigence is a strength and compromise is a weakness. That it's just, you know, you can't get the middle ground. We had a shutdown in 2011. We were $3 billion apart. I went down $1.5 billion. I said to the Republican leaders, "Come up $1.5 billion. We'll meet in the middle." They wouldn't budge. So when you get that kind of intransigence and people think are getting reinforced for it, and the people are willing to be compromisers and find the middle ground, get attacked in the next primary from some extremists, you know, it makes it very, very difficult. And it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse in Washington. It's gotten worse in Minnesota. And it's, you know, it's very detrimental to our country's progress.
And yet, Governor, I mean, don't you really have to look out to the voters for some accountability on that? There's a reason that voters are sending pretty closely divided government to St. Paul and pretty closely divided government to Washington.
Divided in Washington. Well, it's divided within the Republican Party, but, right. You know, I mean, the voters decide. But if they send even the division, then they're going to have to expect this kind of gridlock, especially with complex problems. I mean, we're hung up on. I mean, healthcare is almost 20% of our state, our national GDP. Enormous consequences for so many people. We go one way or another. So there's not a simple answer. There's not a 7-second soundbite that's going to be a practical solution. So, you know, to find people who are going to be reasonable and rational, and then support them, so they can lead and can make common cause is really incumbent on all the public, and that's a challenge.
We're live at the Minnesota State Fair with Governor Mark Dayton. If you're headed out to the fair, we're at the corner of Judson and Nelson. If you're on the phone lines, feel free to call in, but I'm taking as many questions here in our fair audience as I can get. 651-227-6000. And we're throwing a few flyover trivia questions into the mix as well. I've got another one coming up in just a minute, but a question right over here.
I have a number on the flyover. You know, I don't want to get into crashing, but
hasn't been quite that bad yet. Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You, Governor Dayton, for being here. I appreciate your answers to the questions that are posed. My family lives a good life in Minnesota, but I'm finding that I meet more and more people who are hungry, who especially can't find affordable housing. And I don't think as a single family we can do much, but I'm wondering if you have some ideas as to how this can be helped by citizens as well as the government.
Well, it shows, again, the complexity of problems. You know, we have a full employment economy. We have more people coming in, certainly the metropolitan area. So you're right. Then the cost of housing goes up and the affordability goes down. And, you know, it's very expensive for government to subsidize housing because there's just so many people that would need. But, you know, we're going to have to look at what we can do. And that's where, again, the federal government has the deep pockets. And if they, too, weren't so focused on tax cuts, doing what people need, we'd get a lot more progress.
I'm going to take a question, I think, that follows up well on that. Did you want to add something to that?
From
the phones, I think this fits well with what you've asked. To Chris in Maple Grove. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Gary.
Hey, thanks for waiting.
Thank you. Over the past several decades, wealth has been concentrated in fewer and fewer people. Robotics, artificial intelligence, software, and pure power of the rich are making this situation worse. What is the state's plan to address this, or is this primarily a question for the federal government?
Well, I think it's a question for all of us. You know, the income disparities between people at the very top and everybody else, and especially people lower income, as you say, is growing and growing. And you talk about the reaction of the middle class of Americans in the last election. You know, for Donald Trump, who was saying, you know, you're getting shafted. And you know, clean the swamp, which, of course, he hasn't done, but that was good rhetoric. Bernie Sanders, the same thing. I mean, people are frustrated. People feel very alienated from their government. And they're right. They're right. You know, the income at the top keeps going up. And, you know, I think we've done a better job. We've made Minnesota taxes more progressive. That's one thing government can do, is if people make money, hey, more power to them if it's honest and honorable. But then pay your share of taxes to support the rest of it, everything else. And to make more money and pay less taxes is really un-American, and we need to recognize and say that.
Question right out here in the audience.
Good morning, Governor. I was wondering, as a citizen, it's so hard to figure out where we can be effective throwing our energy. There's so much to pay attention to right now. So I'm curious, once you join us again in the rank of citizens, if there is an issue or a set of issues that you feel like you're going to throw your energy behind, where you feel like citizens can be truly effective?
Well, it's a great question. I haven't answered it yet. I've got another year and almost a year and a half. And for at least the next year, I'm so focused on what I have to do, what I can do, still can do as governor. If you ask me that question a year from now, I'd give it some thought. But, you know, I love going to the elementary schools. And I left one of the schools one time, and when I was in the Senate, I turned to my staffers and said, you know, we could just lower the voting age to 5, I might win another election.
Yeah.
And she looked at me and said, it would be close. But I'd like to be a hall monitor in an elementary school and just sit in the chair at the end and, you know, keep an eye on all the kids, but waves go by. I mean, that's where the vitality, that's where the future lies. And I have 2 grandsons now who are 4 and 6 months, so I get a dose of it from them. But that'd be the direction I'd go.
So, Governor, that staffer, she was kind of kidding when she said it would be close. But she was also reminding you that, you know, it's a tumultuous kind of world to be in politics. Who tells you the hard truths about yourself and about politics when you're in a, you know, when you're in the kind of bubble that a governor can be in?
My 2 sons, Eric, 37, Andrew, 33, are my best critics.
Are they?
Oh, absolutely.
What's the last thing they said to you that you kind of went, geez, they might be right?
Well, good question. Well, my son Eric's very concerned about the cost of doing business in Minneapolis, and he runs a restaurant, so that whole issue there. He and I have had numerous debates about tip credits, tip penalties, and the like. But, you know, he's very direct. I have staff that, you know, tell me, I always say the best help you can get from your friends is the truth. And I prefer my staff doesn't tell me I'm wrong in front of a couple hundred people, but I would prefer they tell me I'm wrong before I go out there and have 200 people think I am wrong. So I hope I'm encouraging that. I hope my staff knows that I reinforce that and ask for that and reward that. I've got tremendous senior staff, Jamie Tincher, chief of staff, Tina Smith, the lieutenant governor. I mean, people I've had longstanding professional relationships with that I trust to tell me their truth. And they do so, and I benefit from that.
Question right over here.
So mine's actually a bonus flyover trivia question
right.
for you.
Right.
Where is the largest recorded earthquake, and this instrumental recorded earthquake, in Minnesota?
Wow. Largest. Oh, and
you
give
need
us
a
hint,
clue.
Yeah.
It's close to University of Minnesota campus.
You know, I don't know.
Largest
give the
recorded
man a, give
earthquake.
The man a T-shirt.
All right. And it happened. Okay, close to the U of M campus.
Morris.
Does anybody want to hang on? Does anybody want to guess?
Morris?
Is that right?
Stevens County, Minnesota, Chicago, which is about, 10 miles from Morris. So.
How do you know that?
I went to U of M Morris.
What year?
Wow.
1975.
And what do you know what the measurement was?
4.5, 4.7, something like that.
Fantastic question. Wow.
I was also a geology major.
Give our answer.
Very good.
Oh, good. You've got one. Okay, good. Back to some flyover questions. I know the governor couldn't wait for this. Here's
I'm leaving for the chocolate mole right now.
Not quite yet. When Meriwether Lewis joined the expedition to explore the West in 1804, Dr. Benjamin Rush, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence, gave him a medication for the trip. And the medication was called Rush's Thunderbolt. What was the thunderbolt? I think you can use your imagination. Yes, ma'am. Right. Let's get the microphone right over there. Jeff, yes.
See, she's not even giving me a chance. She just knows going right away. I don't have a clue.
Well, you looked a little puzzled. So.
I'm very puzzled.
All right, right back. Yeah.
Was it moonshine?
No.
Oh.
Aha. Uh-huh. Good guess. Right behind you, Jeff.
Cocaine.
No. Wow, cocaine? No.
Cannabis?
What did it? No, it was not cannabis. Well, these are good guesses, though. It's something that would leave you, let's just say, not well prepared for the rest of the trip. You might need to take a couple days off of the trip.
Russian vodka?
No, okay. No, good guess. No. A medication. Yes, ma'am, right up here with the microphone.
Some sort of laxative?
Yes. That's why it was called the Thunderbolt. It was a laxative so powerful that Meriwether Lewis had to take days to rest on the trip. Aha. Give those people T-shirts. Fantastic. Nicely done. Okay. Other questions for the governor? Yes. Yes, ma'am. Right there in the front row. For you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, governor. I'm just so thankful that you've been our governor, and I'm sorry to see you leave.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, I think that President Obama told number 45 that North Korea would be a big thing on his screen. What would you say for the next governor of Minnesota would be the big thing?
Well, I think we're going to be at a fiscal, we're at a fiscal precipice now with the tax bill that was passed. And we've had, as I said, steady economic growth over the last 7 years overall. And when the U.S. economy goes into its next downturn, it's going to push Minnesota over that precipice. And you're going to have to look at tax budget deficits, and those are very painful, as I know from 2011. And that's going to drive everything. How much can we contribute to public education? How much more are we going to do for transportation? How much are we going to say, well, this is because bad business climate, because taxes are too high, so we've got to cut taxes and then have to cut services even more? That's going to be the real tough one.
And do you think Congress is well prepared to...
Well, we're talking about the state legislature.
Oh, you're talking about the state?
I don't think Congress is well prepared for anything.
There's also some... There's fiscal, big fiscal decisions.
Well, they're going to take. We have serious deficits at the federal level, but there's 2.3% of GDP, which the experts say is acceptable. So what are they going to do? They're going to go cut taxes. They couldn't agree on health care, so they're going to. I'll tell you, they will find a tax bill because that's what they love in Washington. It's feeding at the trough. All the special interests come in. It's this deal, that deal, the other deal, and the result will be another $500 billion lost revenues for the country and next fiscal precipice there and more debt for our kids and grandkids. So, yeah, that's where they're going to go, I predict.
Governor, that what you just said about feeding at the trough is not a real ringing endorsement for going into public service at the federal level.
Public service is as good as the people who are in it make it. If the good people stay out of public service, then, that leaves the vacuum for those who have, other motives. We need the best and brightest people we have to commit to public service, to be willing to go in there and make a difference. It's the most rewarding field I could think of besides, in addition to being a teacher. Because you make a difference in people's lives. And what better reason to get out of bed in the morning and at the end of the day say, I did something that made somebody else's life better.
One last flyover question before I know we have to let you go because you're going to another thing.
I'm going to get a chocolate mole.
Are you? Well, then I'm going to keep you a little longer. Where is the malt stand, right? I've got to get one of those.
Yeah.
You've said this so many times, now I have to have a chocolate mole.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
go there.
A couple more questions then. This is flyover. In what Minnesota city was water skiing invented?
I know that. Lake City.
Excellent. Give the governor a flyover T-shirt. All yours, governor. Nicely done. Any other flyover questions?
Medium. That's a little large for me.
Is it?
It is medium.
We'll get you on the fence. Any other flyover questions for the governor before he has to run? Any other? Yes, sir, right in the back.
I'd like to ask you, with marijuana legalization doing good in places like Colorado, bringing in so much money, and like 2017, I believe California will be legal for recreation. When do you think Minnesota will do that, with 60% of all Minnesotans being all right with recreational use?
Okay, that's flyover, getting high, flying, you know, get it.
Well, it won't happen as long as I'm governor. I just don't think it's a good public policy. You know, Colorado has had some serious problems. One thing is there's still a big black market because the government puts taxes on what they're selling, and so people can get it cheaper, underground as they have before. You know, we got so many drugs now. God almighty, we got the opioid crisis. We got the heroin, methamphetamines. We got so many people who are out there on highways and in the public who are just disoriented and, bent out of shape from what they're ingesting. And we got child abuse and abandonment and all this stuff. So we want to add another drug to our mix. I mean, if somebody wants to get marijuana, go visit California or Colorado. Don't bring it back here, but I don't see it as improving the quality of life in those societies.
I sense our young man does not agree with that. Is that right? Can we take the microphone?
When I was your age, I wouldn't agree to it either.
Really?
I just would say to that I feel like legalizing it would be taking money away from the black market industry. We're giving money to those people if we keep it illegal. If we legalize it, and, marijuana doesn't kill anyone, that's known. And also, if we used it for medical purposes, maybe we wouldn't have to use so many pharmaceutical prescriptions and things like that.
Governor,
I think overall it would be good for
us. That was very well said. And one of the tax
rights...
The tax revenues is a very good reason to legalize. We do have medical marijuana in Minnesota. We've taken that step. But, you're very well informed. Good for you. Very good questions.
Governor, before I let you go, because we're going to do a little thread question here with Minnesota Mysteries, what's the best book you've read this summer?
I'm reading a book on the history of Minnesota. I wish I could remember the name of it offhand because it's really well written.
The history. A book about the. Is it fairly new or?
I'll have to get back to you.
You'll get back to me.
Let me have the chocolate malt.
Have a chocolate malt. Come back with the title.
All right,
Governor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Really great to have you here. Thanks very much. Enjoy that malt.